Hannah, I think you're going to have to handle this for a second because my microphone is busted.
The microphone's busted.
Yeah. But I'll fix that while we talk to Aaron Blake from the Washington Post. Hey, Aaron. Wrote a very, I think this is a pretty fascinating story today about the fact that the, it's titled How President Trump Turns a Reasonably Popular Policy into a Mess. And I'll just let you take it from there. Because as you point out in this, a poll shows that half of Americans like the idea of restricting travel. And they like the suspending immigration from terror-prone regions, right? That sort of broad-stroke appeal here, as you write. But then this happened on Saturday. What could they have done differently, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of the debate surrounding this issue has been about the fact that these are predominantly Muslim countries, all seven of them. Obviously, President Trump, when he was a candidate, spoke about a more broad ban on all Muslim immigration. So that's been the real contentious part of this. But I think where they really went wrong in this case was the implementation. A lot of the Republican criticism, and there's been plenty of it,
sure,
in the last few days, it's been about the implementation, about not being given a heads up, about the fact that this, you know, affected green card holders and people who had helped U.S. military, the war on terrorism, you know, basically being stranded at these airports. And so I think it's a good example of, you know, a policy that perhaps was contentious but wasn't inherently a hugely controversial thing, at least as far as the American people are concerned, really turning into something much bigger than it had to be when President Trump signed it on Friday.
Well, the Department of Homeland Security didn't seem to know how to enforce what he was trying to do here, and that led to the disruption and the uncertainty, for sure, at the airports and among the countries. It seemed like it just sort of just got plopped in everybody's lap so quickly without the necessary, you know, measures being taken to get us to where we needed to get, to make it more, you know, to allow this policy to actually take place without that kind of disruption.
Yeah, and White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer this morning basically said that they did not give the agencies or members of Congress a heads up on this policy because it was a national security issue. But as you said, the result of that is that the implementation was faulty in certain parts. People didn't quite know what to expect. It was dropped on them on a Friday afternoon, and then over the weekend they had to figure out how to implement it. So I think that's really the major problem here, and I think it's something that the White House isn't exactly acknowledging, but many Republicans in Congress certainly are.
As America now uniformly struggles to figure out in a Rashomon style, what's the truth? Because the truth often lies in between two people's claims, but we're not exactly sure anymore where the truth lies. And that's, I think, one of the dizzying and certainly unsettling things about these last 9 days, which is you're not quite sure what you're getting, because sometimes things just, you know, are easily debunked that come out of the White House. And some things are explained away more simply when the media wants to, and I say the media, I don't even like to use that term, because when some reporters will issue certain stories, you know, there's some stories that the reporter may have lost the lane there too, right? So it is a reality of you know, trying to, it's hard to figure out what's right and what's wrong. Now, some of the claims today about this concerning the way the Obama administration did this versus the way the Trump administration did this, there's a bunch of Obama people who've been on TV today, and including the former president himself making a statement about having a statement released by his office,
right,
not by him specifically, but by his office.
This was one of those issues. He said he would not remain silent on if there was a line crossed about a Muslim ban. The other one was the Dreamers, and he stayed true to what he said. He came out with that statement saying that he disagrees with the discrimination
Well, it's interesting because, you know what, there's, you know, a lot of talk about how this was bungled. And I think Aaron's point here, too, is that you had, the Iraqi interpreters weren't able to get in. And then some of these countries, have not had a problem with citizens of these countries creating terrorist acts here in the United States and all that. And there are arguments, right, that certainly can take a lot of the steam out of the White House's position on this. However, there are some very significant issues with how the whole rhetoric of the president when he told the Christian Broadcasting Network about the prioritization of Christians, and then the wording in this particular piece about minority groups in these countries. Now, here's what I would wonder, and Aaron, I don't know that this is just want to throw this out there, that Alawite Muslims in Syria would be a minority group. And yet that is the group of Bashar al-Assad. So if he's sending his security forces over here, they would get priority, right? I mean, I don't understand that. Anybody?
The Christian exception, I think, is what drew.
Well, he says minority groups. I mean, the rule here is minority groups. So it would be Christians, I'm assuming,
because
Buddhists.
In Syria, Christians would be the minority.
Right, but there are certain types of Muslims. I mean, Muslim, there's Sunni, Shia, Alawite. There's all kinds of different sects of Islam that are at play here, too. So I don't. So what does that mean? Aaron, what does that mean?
you're maybe a little bit above my pay grade, right, on that one, but I think what happened here is that and Rudy Giuliani did an interview on Saturday night that spoke to some of this, is that basically this did start out as a blanket ban on Muslim immigration, which is what President Trump proposed in December of 2015, and what they did was basically kind of go from there and try and make it legally palatable. They wanted to make it less, controversial by focusing on terror-prone countries. And so this is what they came up with. And so there's certainly disagreements about which countries should have been excluded. Should Saudi Arabia be on that list of countries, given that many of the 9/11 hijackers came there, is a really big argument made by opponents of this. It's just such a hot-button issue for the Trump administration to take on in their seventh day. And they exacerbated it by having those implementation problems.
Yeah, it's interesting because it seems as if, and you cite some of this in your article about how a majority or close to it of Americans believe that there should be some sort of suspension of immigration or more vetting of people from terror-prone regions. I think when it starts sounding a little bit more like a religious litmus test is when it lost a lot of people, and then also the implementation, of course, with Department of Homeland Security not knowing about it and it not getting, it seemed like there was absolute uncertainty and even chaos in some places when they were trying to come back in.
Right. So there have been a couple of polls on this in the last several weeks here. If you just stated as a, ban on immigration from terror-prone countries, it's got the support of Americans, 48 to 42. ABC News and the Washington Post, though, did a poll showing that if you cast it as a ban on Muslims from many countries, it's got 2-to-1 opposition. So it's a crucial portion of this debate, the idea of whether this is targeted at Muslims and whether it's not. And so I think we've seen a significant pushback on that line, especially from the Trump team. Just today, but it's going to continue to be kind of the central part of this debate that the two sides are going to be fighting over constantly.
Aaron, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir. Aaron Blake from the Washington Post. By the way, I just want to point out something, Aaron, that Donald Trump says that the Washington Post is overrated. So it puts you in you and Meryl Streep, sir. Just going to say
that's
that.
Good company. And the cast of Hamilton.
And the cast of Hamilton, right.
Amazing.
So I just want to say that.
I think you may... You may have chosen the most PG comment that he's made about the Washington Post.
That's true.
Yeah, there are some others we wouldn't be able to say here.
That is true. Congratulations and welcome to the overrated. All right. Thank you, sir. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Aaron.
It's weird. He went after. Did you see what he tweeted about John McCain and Lindsey Graham today?
Oh my gosh, no, I didn't see that one. It's so hard to keep track.
Former presidential candidates. Those two former presidential. In other words, you didn't make it. I did. Just true. But you know what's interesting? Did you hear what he said there about the 2-to-1 opposition?
Mm-hmm.
When you do say it would be a Muslim ban versus, from regions, that means 2-to-1. That's about 33%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would be for it, 66% opposed to it. That 33% seems to be the consistent 33% that is the hammock of the American populace that Donald Trump enjoys the ride in. And I think he believes if he can hold that 33%, which was the argument that many people were making about why Donald Trump could win this thing. If they drop Hillary into the 30s along with him and people are confused by the time you get to November,
mm-hmm.
that he could win. And that's exactly how it played out. And especially when you overlay the state play by, the electoral college play, if you will. That's the way he could win. And that is true. It does seem like it's about 33%. He goes, the American people who voted for us, you see as people come out, whether it's Kellyanne Conway or Sean Spicer or whomever, come out and talk about the fact that, the American people, they knew this and they voted for him. And that's the way it is. It's that 33% that they're talking about. And I think that though it got him to the White House, it will have some slap in the face reality to him. At some point, because he enjoys about a 35%, 36% approval rating at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to have that number as he continues to do things, some of which will be seen as popular. Some of the, I think the deregulation thing, I think, is going to have more than 50% approval.
You like that one?
Well, I think a lot of people, pro-business, I think a lot of business people are going to like it. And I think a lot the other people who are not going to like it are going to be people who understand enough about it to not like it. Or think about it enough to not like it, are a pretty limited group of people
mm-hmm.
in America. So I think that's the sort of thing. And if it does result in more capitalization coming to America and investment in America and jobs, I mean, listen, that's what he did talk about. I think then tomorrow this is going to be big.
Tomorrow he is going to announce
tomorrow night, we think. I mean, this could change a couple times so far. But there are three names from which he can choose to be his first Supreme Court nomination.
Yeah, federal appeals court judges. And they're saying that they're trying to find someone in the mold of Justice Scalia. That's been the goal all along. And they're even saying there's like a Scalia index to see which one most resembles Scalia in views. And pro-life, a big issue that's come up, and he wants to appoint someone who is pro-life. And we'll see. I mean, it sounds like there's going to be a fight. The Democrats saying they're going to filibuster.
I think there's two. There's Thomas Hardiman and Neil Gorsuch. Both of those guys get through easily, fairly easily. Nothing's going to be easy, but
nothing's
fairly
gonna be
easily.
Get prepared for that.
But there will be a fight if it's William Pryor. And that's what everybody is saying. William Pryor is the guy from Alabama. He's a friend of Jeff Sessions. He is his opinions and his writings on abortion and gay rights and things like that are certainly going to be questioned by Democrats because they're pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Democrats are going to be able to beat him on it. I think that the Republicans are going to go with it. And that's going to be the kind of thing that... I think Trump's going to go for it because he loves it. Right now, he figures he's going to use all the capital he's got.
What if he picks his sister?
That'd be good. I think she's the best. Better hair. This traffic report brought to you by Plumbers911Chicago.com. Winter's upon us, Chicagoland, and so are frozen pipes. If you suspect you have a frozen pipe, Plumbers 911 contractors are ready 24/7. Visit Plumbers911Chicago.com. Plumbers911Chicago.com. Be a letter.